Nick DiCiglio here on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studios here until 5 a.m. when Steve Cochran rolls in. We'll hang out with him for a little bit after the 5 o'clock news. Phone number is 312-981-7200. You could send your text to 24720. And you can join us if you'd like. If you're interested in the legend of Jack the Ripper, well, you're going to be really fascinated by my guest. His name is Trevor Marriott, a former Murder Squad police officer who has spent over 11 years examining the Jack the Ripper murders and thinks that possibly Jack the Ripper never existed. And we welcome Trevor to the show to discuss this. Welcome, Trevor.
Hello there. Good morning.
Good morning. First of all, how long were you a Murder Squad police officer, and was that a direction that you wanted to go to when you were younger?
Not particularly. It was just one of the various departments as part of my portfolio that I worked in, basically.
What kind of constitution does one have to be successful at that kind of a job, Trevor?
Well, I think a strong constitution initially, but of course it is a job, and you know you are there to do a job, and sometimes emotions have to be put on the back burner. Really,
was your interest in the Jack the Ripper case peaked because of your job, or were you already interested in the Jack the Ripper case before you became a squad police officer?
No, I think that I'd always had more than a passing interest in the case, because the case is such that it's been ongoing for so many years, and every so often there are new bits of information that do come out in the public domain via the press, the television. Every so often there's a new television documentary made, and in the past we've had full-length feature films. So it's kind of always been there. It wasn't till I had time available to me to actually sit down and carry out a new cold case reinvestigation into the mystery.
In terms of cases that you actually worked on, Trevor, what was one of the more fascinating ones for you, most challenging ones that you personally worked on?
Well, I think each individual one is challenging because no two cases are the same. So I don't think there's any one that really sticks out. You know, they are all individual, and they all have to be looked at individually. And you know, once you've been involved in one, you then move on to the next one whenever that presents itself.
The most recent book that you've written is called The Evil Within.
Well, there's two, actually. Oh, okay. The Evil Within is a book that I've just published in relation to serial killers, namely the world's worst serial killers. There is a new book out also at the same time on Jack the Ripper, which is called Jack the Ripper, The Secret Police Files.
Okay. Let me ask you about The Evil Within. The Evil Within is it's out right now, and people can get it. And there's a link to your website on our Facebook page as well at facebook.com/NickDShow. Tell me a little bit about the serial killers that are covered in The Evil Within, and what's so fascinating to you about the mind of a serial killer.
Well, I think that the thing is I set out to kind of analyze what I deem to be the world's worst serial killers from around the world, and I researched 70 cases going back from the kind of 60s right up to the present times. But when I started to do this book, I didn't want it just to be a book on serial killers, because there's many books out there just simply on serial killers, and I didn't want to over-glorify these monsters and their crimes. What I wanted to seek to do as well was to not only obviously highlight the crimes, but to also portray the pain and suffering that the victims must have endured at the hands of some of these monsters before finally succumbing to death. That was one aspect of the book. The second aspect of the book, which I think made it different, was to highlight the errors of judgment and bad mistakes made by police officers around the world in at times allowing some of these killers to go free, and allowing them to kill again before finally being apprehended.
What, can you cite a couple of examples of major mistakes that the police would make or allowing these guys to be free?
I think firstly there's one case that springs to mind here in the UK with Peter Sutcliffe, the Yorkshire Ripper, way back in the 70s and early 80s, where the police actually spoke to him on five separate occasions in relation to this murder. at these series of murders and didn't kind of, you know, pursue it at that point. I think, again, if you look at an American serial killer, Ted Bundy, I mean, Ted Bundy was allowed to escape on two occasions and to go out and kill again while he was on the loose. I mean, things such as that should never have happened.
Mm. Well, that's a book called The Evil Within, but we are interested in talking about Jack the Ripper. Now, for people who are maybe not familiar with the legend of Jack the Ripper, what is the myth? It involves five prostitutes from Whitechapel, right? And it was about 125. In fact, this year is the 125th anniversary.
It is indeed. But the myth, as we've been led to believe all of these years, is clearly incorrect, because you mentioned that this killer known as Jack the Ripper is attributed to have killed five and five only prostitutes. Clearly, that's not the case, because, again, police records indicate that there were other murders before and other murders after those accepted five, which the police clearly had identified as being the work of the same killer. So that's the first kind of, you know, error that people have been relying on all of these years. And, of course, the myth surrounding it is the name Jack the Ripper is the perception that people have of a man in a black hat, a black cape, carrying a black bag, walking the streets of Whitechapel in London, killing prostitutes and removing their organs at the scene of the crime.
And that's just not the case?
Not from my investigation, no. Certainly somebody dressed as I've described him wouldn't be walking the streets of Whitechapel, because that's a picture, it's a false image that's been created by television, by documentary makers and by some of the 200 authors that have published books on this subject. Somebody dressed like that in Whitechapel at that time would not have lasted 5 minutes, because that's a picture of a man that's a man of wealth, a man of substance, and clearly somebody walking around the crime-ridden streets of Whitechapel in 1888 would likely have not been robbed and may well have even been murdered.
When did you first begin to question? I mean, you said there are over 200 authors who've written books. There have been documentaries. There have been, fictional-based films on this. When did you first start to question these things and start your investigation?
Basically, when I first started to look at it, how it sort of first came about was I was asked to give a lecture to a university on a crime topic, and I picked the Ripper, and I wasn't totally familiar with the case at that time, but I soon became familiar with the case, and clearly, looking at it from a professional perspective, clearly things were not as we've been asked to believe. You know, for argument's sake, a lot of names who've been regarded as prime suspects, clearly there's not any evidence to even suggest that some of them should be even regarded as a suspect. And likewise with the number of victims. And of course, again, with the removal of the organs, clearly that was an issue that really needed addressing, as to whether somebody could remove, shall we say, a uterus and a kidney from a female victim, having murdered her in almost total darkness and been attributed to removing these organs with medical precision in almost total darkness, given the state of the body at the time and the light available.
So you began to use modern forensic techniques.
Well, not so much modern forensic techniques, but modern investigative methods and teams of medical experts as far as the removal of the organ issue is concerned, to either prove or disprove these theories. Because when you carry out an investigation, no matter what the crime is, you have to prove or disprove the facts. That's the basic principle. And clearly in this case, I set out to either prove or disprove what we've been asked to believe all of these years.
And it's interesting, some of the things that came out of your investigation. The one detail that I find stunning, Trevor, is indeed the name Jack the Ripper. It was possibly created by a member of the press, as you report, a man named Thomas Bulling. That's just mind-boggling to me.
Well, it is. Certainly the police in 1888, because that's fully documented, certainly had their suspicions that it was a newspaper man. They fall short of actually saying who it was. But clearly, I think we now know that it was this man, Thomas Bulling, who was a newspaper reporter. And, of course, again, the letter that he wrote and sent to the Central News Agency in 1888. Now, the Central News Agency in London at that time was the Victorian equivalent of Reuters, I would say, or the Press Association. Reuters is probably more familiar with your listeners.
Yeah, yeah.
So it would get maximum exposure. And, of course, this was the first letter that was ever signed Jack the Ripper. And from there on, the name Jack the Ripper has stuck for 125 years. And, of course, it's been synonymous with modern-day serial killers, has it not? I mean, over here in the UK, we had the Yorkshire Ripper. In America, I think they had the Ripper Crew some years ago. And every modern-day serial killer who seems to kill in similar fashion gets nicknamed the Ripper. But, of course, if you take into account the fact that there was no Jack the Ripper as such, because the name was simply an invention by the member of the press, it does throw a different light on it. And, of course, when you look at the murders, you can quite clearly see that they were not all committed by the same person.
Yeah. It's mind-blowing to me. The fact that you uncovered here, Trevor, about Thomas Bulling, even back in the 1800s, there weren't any ethics in the press.
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
What you uncovered is that even in the 1800s, there was very little ethical conscience in the press.
No, that's right. And simply because, obviously, in 1888, they didn't have television, they didn't have radio, so the newspapers really had a free hand to publish really what they wanted in an attempt to sell newspapers. And I have to say that the process of misrepresentation is still going on today, because I've recently given a number of interviews in the press with regards to the Ripper mystery, and when I actually see the finished article in the newspaper, on many occasions it bears no resemblance to what I've actually said in the interview.
Interesting. Interesting. Trevor, hang on, please.
You can't do that on live.
No, you can't. No, there was no way I can alter what you're saying, Trevor, I promise. hang on 1 second, okay? Trevor Marriott is with us, who is a former Bedfordshire murder squad police officer. He spent over 11 years examining the Jack the Ripper murders. If you have questions or comments, it's 312-981-7200. More to come. WGN-TV Morning News is Chicago's must-watch morning news. Thursday's must-watch, Freddy Krueger himself, Robert Englund, is in studio. Watch WGN-TV Morning News Thursday. Studies show 75% of people have sleep difficulties, leading to health problems, weight gain, memory loss, and irritability. Your sleep issues may be caused by a bad pillow. When was the last time you replaced your pillow? You need to try a MyPillow. And by the way, I have one of these MyPillows, and I slept on it yesterday. It's awesome. I personally can recommend the MyPillow. I think it's fantastic. It actually helped me sleep, and I'm not kidding. I'm not making this up. I'm not a real sleeping kind of guy. And it's a great pillow. It's fantastic, honestly. It has this three-piece interlocking fill that conforms to your preferred shape. With four different support levels, MyPillow is guaranteed the most comfortable pillow that you will ever own. MyPillow has this built-in cooling effect, keeping your head cool throughout the night. On top of a 10-year warranty, MyPillow is so confident that you'll love them that they'll give you a 60-day money-back guarantee. Try it risk-free. Call now. Find out how you can get free shipping and four free gifts. When you get fitted for your very own MyPillow, use promo code WGN to save an additional 25%. Call 800-299-9579 or log on to MyPillow.com. That's 800-299-9579 or MyPillow.com. Use promo code WGN, and I highly, highly recommend the MyPillow. I can't wait to get home and put my head on it when I go to bed. It's honestly a great product. All right, quick break. We'll come back, talk more Jack the Ripper coming up on WGN. Nick DiGilio on The Voice of Chicago, 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Studios on the 7th floor of Trib Tower. Trevor Marriott is my guest, and he has been examining the Jack the Ripper murders for over 11 years now, and is pretty sure that Jack the Ripper never existed. And we're talking a little bit about the myth and the facts. Trevor, welcome back to the show, sir.
Hello, good morning.
I want to talk a little bit about the suspects that historically have been names that have been thrown around. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I mean, when you look at the suspects, when I started looking at them, I kept reading a kind of a band of about six names that were seen to be looked upon as the prime suspects. But when you look at the actual list of suspects, it numbers well over 200, and simply they couldn't all been Jack the Ripper. And again, from a professional perspective, when you look at this list of suspects, the 200, the reason they've been put forward or named as potential suspects is really nothing more than based on wild, speculative, uncorroborated theories by different people.
Have authors of books in the about Jack the Ripper, people who have been studying Jack the Ripper, have they changed their? Have you convinced people who have written books or been studying this for a while? Have you convinced some of these people that it's no longer the fact?
No, not at all. Obviously, because there are people that are passionate about this Ripper mystery, and to some, it has become a cottage industry. Obviously, that, as you mentioned, the various authors that have published books all suggesting Suspect A or Suspect B is the killer, but not really coming up with any strong foundation to back that up. But yet, because the public are so interested in this, they will buy the books and they will get taken in and readily accept what they read and what they see. And of course, that's another part of my investigation, which soon became apparent, that the facts surrounding this case, little as they are, that have been left from 1888, have over the years been totally distorted by the press, the television, the media, and authors, to the point that members of the public have been totally misled now because of the fact that, as I say, that they believe what they see on a television documentary, they believe what they read in somebody's book. And clearly, as I say, when you look at this from a professional perspective, it's not all that it's cut out to be.
There are also secret police files that, Trevor, you tried to get made public unsuccessfully. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, I mean, for many years, people have suggested that the police knew the identity of this killer, but for varying reasons chose not to bring him to justice or couldn't bring him to justice, and that the names of the killer were secreted away in secret police files somewhere. Well, we did actually uncover what can loosely be described as secret police files. In actual fact, it was a Metropolitan Police Special Branch Register, which was a part of an information gathering system. And in there were a number of entries that related to Jack the Ripper and the Whitechapel murders and the names of suspects, which was interesting because this document had not seen the light of day since 1888. And as you say, I had a mammoth battle with the Freedom of Information commissioners to try to get this made public. Sadly, the police objected and wouldn't release it, but they did decide to provide me with the information from those files relating to the murders. But clearly, the information wasn't as exciting as I'd expected it to be. It was simply the names of the surnames of a number of suspects. But of course, again, the members of the public get taken in, not knowing fully how the police information gathering process works, that simply because these names are shown as suspects, they could be as a result of malicious information given to the police or anonymous information given to the police. And clearly, it was interesting to find these names after 125 years, but they turned out not to be anything of any excitement at the end of the day.
Again, one more time, the title of your Jack the Ripper book, Trevor?
It's Jack the Ripper, The Secret Police Files.
Okay, Jack the Ripper, The Secret Police Files. We have a link on our Facebook page, facebook.com/NickDShow. We've scratched the surface here. I think people should get the book. It's fascinating stuff, Trevor, and your website is linked up on our Facebook page, and I hope people check it out. Really interesting talking to you, Trevor, and you have a great day, okay?
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, absolutely. Trevor Marriott, check it out. And we have a link on our Facebook page. Really fascinating stuff. We barely scratched the surface. There's a lot going on, and this book is interesting, to say the least. All right, quick break here. The news is coming up next on WGN.